huge news, years in the making, my brand new book that my publishers refuse to publish, Money Matrix. Beat the money system and build generational wealth. Understand the three main ways that the banks productize you and make money from you. You'll be able to turn that system against itself, build generational wealth and multiple streams of recurring income. It's all at moneymatrix.cash. And if you're quick, the first few hundred registrants and buyers will receive many special bonuses from me. The brand new Moneymaker Summit 3-day special event. Meet me at a champagne reception. Meet me at a multi-millionaire networking dinner. Go now, moneymatrix.cash. This is huge. In this episode, I am hardcore confronted by an up-and-coming interviewer. I actually know this interviewer and did consider him a friend, but many people have said he was unnecessarily brutal on me. He grilled me on why I interviewed Andrew Tate. He would not leave it alone about if I pay for guests and tried to trip me up many times. He even managed to get me to kind of expose Stephen Bartlett, even though everything I said was true. But frankly, I pushed back on him quite hard and believe that many of his responses are not accurate. This interviewer doesn't usually interview entrepreneurs. He's got ex-warlords, criminals, you name it. So I'm a different type of interview for him. This went wild in his community, and people who are entrepreneurial seem to side with me. Everyone else seemed to side with him. I would love your thoughts. Let's do this.
Rob, welcome to the show, mate.
Dodge. About time, isn't it?
It is. It has been on the cards for a while.
Yeah. Harry said, where did you meet Dodge? We met on Clubhouse, didn't we?
We did. We met on Clubhouse. My God. Yeah, it was.
Yeah. I picked up a few good friends from Clubhouse, actually. It's a shame they fucked it.
It's a shame they fucked it.
Yeah.
You are right. You know what? But it was good timing for everyone's minds.
Yeah.
And to meet new people and have good chats.
Yeah. It was everything you lost in lockdown, you got in Clubhouse.
Yeah.
The connection, meeting new people, having interesting conversations.
Yeah.
They just turned their back on entrepreneurs too quick. And I think we're a bit left about the revenue.
Yeah.
That's
you were
shame.
All in, weren't you?
Yeah,
you were hosting rooms like every hour across America and across here and da 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 da.
Yeah, I became the 80th highest followed person on Clubhouse within about 9 months.
Yeah,
I'd sort of semi-retired from my businesses.
Yeah,
I've done it a few times over the years, and I had time.
Yeah, and just, we all had plenty of time, didn't we?
Yeah,
let's roll all the way back. Where did you grow up, and how did you become an entrepreneur?
Growing up wasn't really something I did anywhere for any length of time because Dad kept moving us around the place. So my dad's always owned pubs, bars, hotels, the odd little club. And so we always moved around Cambridgeshire and around that area. So I don't really have a home in terms of where I'm from. I've lived in Peterborough for the longest amount of time, which is since I was probably 17. So
what was pub life like for you? Because I grew up in pubs from a very young age, from the age of like 3.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. All the way up to 18 plus.
Yeah. So what was good about living in pubs is the constant supply of cold Coca-Cola in the old school bottles.
Then you turn to the squirters.
Yeah. Yeah. But then the downside of that was it made me fat. I was like a pool shark from a very young age.
Same.
Because that's what else did you have to do except play pool?
Yeah.
But emotionally, probably fucked me up a bit because mum and dad would have to go and work downstairs in the pub, and me and my sister would often just be left. Not criticizing my parents. They did, you know, I couldn't wish for any better parents. But we were left alone a lot from a young age, even though they were still in the same building. So, yeah, that created quite a sense of loneliness. I've paid a lot of therapists a lot of money to sort of dig into why at times I can feel very lonely. So I don't really have a where I'm from. Mm. I mean, I support Liverpool in football. But
what was school life like for you? I just rolled back a bit there. You said, you know, drinking Coke, eating loads of crisps, eating pub food. I was the same.
The big Walker's crisp
boxes. I used to get the KP man come in the morning. It was £2 a box. I had like 6 boxes in my bedroom.
Yeah.
I get it. I get where you're coming from. It's like there was nothing back there to say you can't eat that, you can't do this. It's just you were just grabbing, eating pub foods, lasagna, chili con carne, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
How did that affect your mind? How did it affect you when you were at school, knowing that you were...
For years, people have been asking me where I buy my watches. Many of you may know I'm a watch collector, I'm a watch investor, and those as an asset class have done me very well in the last 15 years. I have never shared where I source my watches from or my watch dealer until now. My watch dealer used to be a professional footballer for Manchester United, and he formed a watch brand called Broadwalk. And he sources the higher-end brands like Rolex, Audemars Piguet, Patek Philippe and Richard Mille. I trust him, I've used him for many years, and recently we've done a partnership. Hence, I'm inviting you, if you want to start investing in watches and protect your money from the banks and inflation, to check out Broadwalk. That's Broadwalk. And the website is broadwalkgroup.com. The email is sales@broadwalkgroup.com. And please don't share this, but his number is 07496 878153. Obviously, only message him if you're serious about buying and investing in the higher-end watches. People have been asking me for years, and for the first time ever, you can get access to my watch team.
Getting bloating up, getting bigger.
Yeah, that was most of my pain comes from that source of being the fattest kid in my year. For probably 2 to 3 years straight, I was the token. So if you're like the second fattest kid in the year, you can always go, well, he's fatter. Yeah. And the butt of the jokes were never on the third fattest kid. Yeah. They were on the fattest kid. And that was me. And I hated it more than anything I can tell you. And I always felt so lonely because anytime any of the other kids were talking and whispering, I just always assumed it was about me. And sometimes it was, but often it wasn't. And so I created this real, like, outsider complex. And weirdly, looking back, it gave me some skills with people because I learned to get on with everyone because it was my only way back in. So even though I couldn't get the girls back then, I was friends with everyone. I learned how to be friends with everyone. But then the downside of that was it made me a bit of a people pleaser type person. I couldn't have any conflict because conflict meant you're ostracized, you're last picked at rugby, you know, all that kind of stuff. It was horrible. And I lost, I begged my mum and dad to get me to leave the school because it was also a boarding school. So it's worse evenings, it's worse weekends.
A lot of bullying.
I want to make it really clear. There was no individual kid at school who was a horrendous bully to me like some people have experienced. Actually, it was just kids being kids. But, you know, kids can be fucking cruel and they don't know it. And they probably, I remember seeing school friends 20 years later and we talk about this and they didn't even know because they were just growing up being kids. But I probably built it up as much in my mind as it was in reality. And so I would cry to my mum and dad. I would cry to my mum every weekend and never to my dad.
Yeah.
And I begged them to let me change schools. And I had this goal. If mum and dad let me leave this school to go to whatever school, I don't care, I'll lose all the weight in the summer holidays. So I lost 3 stone in 8 or 9 weeks, which is not healthy when you're 14 years old.
Just give me an idea of what size you were. How much were you weighing in at?
I guess about 13 stone.
As a 12-year-old? 13?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. So,
And was sport in your life?
Yeah.
It was?
Yeah. Like, I got good at sport because I was fat. Yeah. So getting good at sport meant I got some appreciation and love. So I was opening bat for the county at cricket. I was prop at rugby. One of the upsides, when you're that young, the fat kid is prop.
Get him in there. You'll do good.
Yeah. I mean, it's different now, you know, the fat kids were the props. Yeah. The skinny kid was the hooker. Yeah. You know, and that's how it was back then.
What were you thinking from the age you went to, obviously, university up to probably 21? That 21 to 26, how were you earning a pound note?
A chain of very quick events happened. I went to a property networking event locally. Now, I used to hate what I would deem to be yuppies. You know, or
do you remember that?
Anyone in a suit and a tie and a briefcase, you know, someone in the city, I would hate them. Mm. I liked Radiohead and Rage Against the Machine, and I didn't even know it, but I was quite sort of lefty, ironic, because I wanted to be successful. And it came out of nowhere, really. And then, so I thought, going to a property networking event, they're just all going to be greedy, selfish, suited up yuppies, where I'm some spiky haired artist with holes in his jeans before that was a thing. And I had all this baggage, but it was all noise. It wasn't any based on anything real. But when what happened with my dad, I just went. Because I knew, and actually it wasn't as bad as I thought. And there was more normal people there than I thought. Mm. And then that very first meeting, I met my business partner, still of today, Mark Comer. And then within a few weeks, he'd got me a job in his property company. And within a few weeks, I was earning enough money to start knocking my debt down. Within a year, I got all my debt down. I'd earned nearly 100 grand. My business partner and I had about 20 properties together. So it all started to fit together really quick.
What was his name? Mark Homer?
Yeah. Yeah, he's okay. still my business partner today.
So today, is he?
Yeah.
Okay. What did he see in you, do you reckon? Did he know you were 50 grand in debt?
No.
No.
And I didn't know he had loads of money.
I bet you did.
I did. I got him pissed one time and he told me how much money he had. And I was like, right.
Fire.
6 months later, we had 20 properties.
Quality.
With his money.
Quality. Was your brainchild the events in property?
Yeah.
Or was it Mark's?
Well, I don't think it's fair to say it was my brainchild because I wasn't the first person to ever run training and education.
No, but where did you see the opportunity go? And I've been to a couple of these. We can do this better.
Yeah. So I went to a few events where people were teaching property and I thought, they've not really got any charisma. Mm. They're all 25 years older than Mark and I. So I thought, big opportunity. But I also had to feel credible. And I think, I can't say exactly, but maybe when we got to 50 properties that we'd bought, because we used to sell some, package some, give them, you know, charge other people to buy them. But there was a time, it was around about 08, 09, where I thought, you know what? I know enough. And what I don't know, Mark does. And all right, even though we're fairly upstart-ish, everyone seems to be going bust, I'm going to write a book. We should throw a course together. Yeah. And that's what we did.
Did you always want to build an empire?
Yeah.
You did
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You never wanted to go for a lifestyle, what, the, 12 staff and have a real nice lifestyle around it.
But why would you stop? Mm. So Harry and I were talking in the car today. I have 7 cars. Most of them are supercars. And Harry's like, well, yeah.
You've got 7 cars?
Yeah.
What cars have you got? What have you got?
Porsche Panamera Turbo S, Ariel Atom, Porsche 911, newer one, Range Rover, 1989 Porsche Turbo, the bad boys one. How old are you, Dodge?
46.
Right, so we're similar age. I'm 44. Mm. So you remember the film Bad Boys, Will Smith?
Yeah.
And that Porsche, which most young men drooled over or other things. Mm-hmm. Did I just say the Testarossa? No. No, the Ferrari Testarossa. I don't know, is that? Oh, and a Lamborghini Aventador. I don't know why I always forget that one. I'm just about to buy a Aston Martin DBS. And like,
I take it you're just a car, love cars.
Yeah.
You have to with that amount of cars.
Yeah. And I won't stop.
I have no interest in cars. I have no interest in watches.
Okay. I love both of those. Like more than...
Yep.
You know, people say our money doesn't make you happy. It fucking does. Mm. I've been broken. I've been rich. And I tell you, I'm a lot happier when I'm
rich. I get it. I totally get it. It's nothing to do with money. It's just not... That just doesn't interest me. Well, I've got a nice...
It's cheap. It's cheaper to not
nice
be interested in those
car.
Things. Yeah.
Half of the stuff I don't know how to use.
Well, that's perfect. But let's say you loved cars.
Mm.
Why would you get to a number and stop? You wouldn't. You'd
what, with cars?
Yeah.
Well, I only need one car.
Yeah, but no, if you liked cars...
Oh, God, if I liked cars and I was addicted to cars and and I'd think, oh, yeah, that's my bag, I would go for it.
Yeah. And
probably the same with watches, but I'm not a showy person. Because I would feel a plum driving around in a Lamborghini.
Yeah.
I would.
Yeah.
If I stopped at the lights and I had a red Ferrari and I'd look up and see a load of fellas in the van, I'd think, oh, no, that's just me.
Yeah. Well, remember, I was the fat kid at school who never got noticed by anyone, so I used to be showy.
Mm.
I'm a bit less like that now. I often, of all these cars I've got, I hardly drive a lot of them. And I often just drive the Porsche, which is the most understated one, even though it's 700 horsepower. But the point I was going to make, you said, why don't you want a lifestyle business? Because like, I'm not going to stop at 7 cars. I'm going to buy my favorite Ferrari F40 Classic. And I'm then going to get a bigger house so I can have an underground garage so I can have even more cars. Why would you ever stop?
Mm.
People think there's a destination. There's no destination. What are you going to do? You think, I'm not going to get any more guests now on the podcast. I can see that.
Mm.
Eventful entrepreneur podcast.
Eventful lives. We've actually changed to Eventful Lives.
Yes, and I know why you've done that.
We'll go on to that.
Hosted by Dodge Woodall, and you've got all the list of guests you've had. What are you going to do? Oh, no, I've got, because you've got enough guests there. You could just focus on getting those episodes out to more people. Mm. No. You're going to keep interviewing guests. Mm. You're not going to stop. Why are you going to stop?
Because I absolutely love doing a podcast.
I absolutely love building businesses.
I love building businesses. And I've built some amazing businesses and sold businesses. And I've got some brilliant businesses at the moment. But I just don't have the urge to buy cars and watches. The thing for me is nice long lunches, good food, nice holidays and good friends around me.
Yeah.
That's just makes me content.
Yeah.
And I've got a lovely car, but that's just me. And I'm content with that. I just want to know how your mind works in wanting more and more and more, because does that actually bring you happiness?
Right. There's a very long way to answer this
question. Let's go short way.
All right. I cleared the day for you. Oh, fucking day. Bitch, you don't fuck like me,
I've got you for a whole day.
Yeah, you can edit out the bitch you don't like. Well, one thing I just want to say quickly is I'm a fan of long form content. I do the short form because you have to, but I'm a fan of long form, not short form.
I like good conversations.
There you go.
If it's a shit conversation, it'd be short form.
There you go. Or just a good conversation. Edit.
Yeah.
So I believe that one of the main purposes of life is progress, so we become stronger, so we evolve as a species. And happiness is not evolution. Happiness is a reward emotion that we get.
Are you happy?
Let me
No. Are you happy?
No one is happy. People are.
I disagree.
No. Well, everyone's entitled to my opinion. No. Are there times in your life when you get angry?
Very rarely.
But there are. There are.
Yeah, there are. Yeah.
Are there times where you get frustrated?
Very rarely. But there are.
But there are. Are there times where you feel lonely?
No.
Never?
Never.
Never?
Never. Because I've been an entrepreneur since the day I was born. I've never had a job. So people who become entrepreneurs then realise that there's lots of loneliness. Okay. I'm just used to it.
Have you ever been screwed over by anyone?
What, that I haven't got hold of?
Yeah,
and
whatever.
Got my money back.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, have you ever been screwed over by anyone?
I've always got my money back.
Yeah, but did they screw you over for you to get your money back?
Yes, I guess so. Okay. But they didn't. Yeah, yeah.
Have you ever in your life felt envy or jealousy? Ever? Even if it was fleeting and you were a boy. Have you ever felt envy or jealousy?
I must have, but I don't feel like I'm an envious or jealous person.
So the point I'm trying to make is there are times when you are happy and there are times when you are frustrated, angry, envious, jealousy. Mm. Why? Because all of those emotions are required for you as this vessel of a human. If they weren't required, you wouldn't feel them. And they serve a purpose.
But as we get older, you push those ones away. You don't want them to come into your life. You don't want the envy. You don't want the jealousy. You don't want to be, like we're saying, fucked off or angry. I just don't want them in my life.
No, so you work hard to remove them and you work on being happy.
100%.
There you go. So you are not happy. You are working very hard to feel more positive than negative emotions.
100%.
There you go.
Because you have to work it.
Yeah.
But then you have to know what works for you and what doesn't work for you.
Yes. But that's often trial and error, isn't it?
But countryside makes me happy. Nice food makes me happy.
Yeah.
A lovely wife and lovely friends. All these things make me happy. Not material things for me.
No.
But material things to you may make you happy, but I always have to question that with people. Go, but do they make you happy? Because having sent seven cars, I've got friends who've got 5-6 cars and they're car addicts. Are they happy? No.
But why?
Do you get the buzz? Do you get the buzz when you buy, I don't know how much these cars are, they sound expensive, but do you get a buzz when you've dropped 300 grand on a car and gone, I've drive that back home, but fuck, that was uncomfy. But it's an expensive car.
No, you're talking like someone that doesn't have an interest in cars.
That's because, very true.
Don't buy a Lamborghini Aventador for it to be comfortable.
Yeah.
You buy it because it sounds fucking unreal and it looks fucking unreal. And also, I'll tell you one of the reasons why I buy supercars. because I can, because I always wanted them when I was young, but I felt useless.
Yeah.
And now I'm not useless.
So I get that bit. So I understand why you're buying them then, because maybe this is deep rooted to you.
It is.
Some sort of trauma that's gone on.
I like collecting nice things as well. Mm. I collect nice clothes, I collect nice watches. I've always liked collecting things. Why? Because collection is progress.
Mm.
So I
totally get you there. Progress is something that I'm addicted to.
Yeah, because that is inbuilt in you.
Yeah.
Because if you don't progress, you don't evolve and improve as a human. Agreed. Humanity doesn't.
I have to progress every day.
Yeah.
Whether it's the podcast, whether it's getting more people to the festival, whether it's tweaking my businesses, whether it's improving my staff's lifestyle, I want to get every day. That's where I get my buzz from.
And that's in you.
Yeah.
And by the way, that doesn't always make... That and happiness can conflict. Because sometimes you make progress and you feel happy because you progressed.
Yeah.
But sometimes you're frustrated because you're not progressing enough.
I get that as well. That bit.
So you're not always happy then?
No, but I get that. The frustration of not progressing. And so that's why I like to progress every single freaking day. Because that's my buzz.
So the frustration
that's
is good.
That's my addiction.
Yes. So the frustration is good. Why? Because it's forcing the progress.
Yes.
Because if you just like, oh no, Rob, I'm really happy and content.
Yeah.
There would be no frustration. Therefore, there would be no drive for progress.
So it's that frustration. So
this is the, I think this is a really important point. So let us just stay on it for a minute. So you initially asked, am I happy? Overall, I'm fucking grateful for my life. I said this to Harry on the way down. Anything I could have ever wished for when I was 12 years old,
absolutely.
I have got and more, and I am really grateful. An amazing family, I love all my staff, I love what I've built, blah, blah, blah. But no, I'm not happy all the time. Sometimes I'm thoroughly fucked off, thoroughly frustrated. I'm like, I should be doing better than I am. Why did I mess that up? And I'm not under the illusion that I should be happy all the time. And I'm not chasing the delusional fantasy that, well, if I just do this, this, and this, then I'll have eternal happiness.
Yeah.
Because eternal happiness is the tease as the reward for the struggle.
Mm.
Like, you're a fit guy, you've got good muscles. You didn't just get them, you go down the gym and work out every day. And no matter how good you look, you always want to be fitter, stronger and better.
Mm.
So I think the purpose of life is growth and progress. And to go through that, you have to have hardship. The muscles don't grow unless they're ripped. Mm. You don't get fitter unless you gas. So this is why...
Hardship is a lovely thing. Because there's only one way out.
Well, there's two ways out.
There's two ways out, I guess. Back, forward, but of going at that forward route.
Yeah.
But you just said there about the gym. That's all great, hitting the gym, whatever you... But if you're not putting good food into your body, you're not going to... Your body's not going to react well. Your mind is not going to react well. And I'm really, really intrigued in nutrition. I love nutrition. And I find that if you eat well and you train, brilliant. But you can't just train and eat shit and expect to be good.
Mm. Yeah, I'm no food expert. My wife definitely is.
And are you addicted to food?
She would agree with that. I have major emotional baggage around food.
Mm.
And the only thing that keeps me probably from not being fat again is the fear of being fat.
Yeah.
So yeah, I have a bit of a fucked up relationship with food. But I'm training for a fight. My fight is in 6 weeks. It's like a charity boxing match, except we've got a 100-grand bet and it's in front of 1,600 people. And for the first time since I was 12,
I feel like... You've got to take your top off
in front
of a crowd.
Yeah, I'm eating guilt-free.
Yeah.
I'm training a lot.
Yeah, good.
I'm training a hell of a
lot. Give me an example. Is there a white-collar boxing match?
Well, it depends how you define it.
You got head guards on?
Nope.
Good.
12-ounce gloves.
Who are you fighting?
A guy called Samuel Leeds is another guy in the property space, a lot bigger than me.
And why are you fighting him?
One, to raise £130,000 for charity, which is the goal which I think I'll achieve.
Brilliant. Take that charity thing out of the equation. Why are you fighting Samuel Leeds?
He called me out on a podcast. He said, I understand you think you could beat me in a fight. Will you put your money where your mouth is? And I'm a bit of a sucker for a challenge.
So he said that on a podcast today.
Yeah.
So are you competitors in your world?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think he's after a bit of leveraging our brand. We have a bigger property brand. We've been in the business longer than him.
What's his brand called?
His name's Samuel Leeds. It's all based around his own name.
Okay. So he's doing the same thing, buying plenty of property. Is he doing the events everywhere?
Yeah, okay. He's the buying. I don't know how much he's
buying. So you two are looking at each other again. Hold on, mate. Let's have a little clash here. I don't like your business. You don't like my business. Let's have a fight.
Well,
and at the same time, we'll raise some money.
Yeah, I mean, he's really good at the, if you're being kind, you'd call him a marketer.
Yeah.
If you're not, you'd call him a trash talker or a bullshitter.
Right, okay.
He's great at the hype.
Okay.
And so...
Are you good at the hype?
Yeah, but there's more truth in my hype.
Okay.
Yeah, because there's hype and then there's pushing the boundaries and then there's bullshit.
Right, okay.
I can't comment on where he is on that, but I'm certainly lower on the...
On the Richter scale.
Yeah, on the Richter scale. Yeah, the BS-ometer.
Do you fancy your chances against him?
I've won the fight already.
You have, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah. I'm training fucking hard.
Eating well?
Yeah. Well, this is your last question about... So I'm eating guilt-free for the first time in my life, and everyone around me, my wife, my trainers, they're all like, Rob, you're not eating enough. You need to eat more. And they're trying to just... And basically, like, just eat what you want. Get the calories in. And I've never been able to do that. I've always felt really guilty about that. So for the first time ever, I'm eating a volume of food where I might... put on a bit of muscle or at least retain weight. And even despite that, I've lost nearly 8 kilos. And I wasn't fat to start. So
what are you weighing in at the moment? Stone wise?
80 kilos.
80 kilos, okay.
Which for someone who's 6'3".
13 and a half stone.
It's light.
Okay.
It's light. I imagine I'll be fighting in the high 70s.
How seriously are you taking this? On a scale
I'm
of
training like
10.
A world champion.
Okay.
Training like a world champion. Ask him. I'm a psycho trainer.
And what about
like
your mind?
No one trains harder than
and
me.
And what about your mindset?
I've already won the fight.
Okay.
I already worked out how to win the fight. I've already won the fight. And the way he wins the fight is what you call in boxing a puncher's chance.
A big windmill.
Yeah, exactly. Because he can't outspeed me. He already knows it. Yeah. He can't out-technique me. He already knows it. He can't out-fitness me. So if you can't do all those... What can you do? You've got to go for the knockout.
He might have a good right hander, though.
I'm not saying he's not.
You've got to be careful.
Not saying he's not. Yeah. That's what a puncher's chance is.
Yeah.
So I've already gone to that place in my mind where what if he cleans me out with one of those?
Okay.
And I've already been there. I went there 20 weeks ago.
If he knocks you out clean, what's gone through your mind?
I've raised 130 grand for charity. It just so happens that I had to give it to 100 grand to his charity.
Yeah.
I have got fitter than I've ever been. My lifestyle in every way is really good. I stood in the ring. Most people...
That's ballsy to do straight away.
Do you know what? Just getting in the ring and having a... Because when people say white collar, it's almost... I know you didn't, but a lot of people are like, white collar.
No, you can't turn your nose down. Anyone gets in the ring.
Getting in the ring is hardcore. And also...
When's the last time you had a street fight?
I've never had a street fight.
When's the last time you had a fight?
Like a proper fight. I've never had a proper fight.
Okay, so this is your first
fight.
You never had a fight on a rugby pitch or any...
No. I'm the people pleaser, remember?
Okay, of course,
I'm the one splitting the fight up. I'm a lover, not a fighter.
So you're going straight in. And how big's Samuel Leeds?
Well, he started at 118 kilos.
He started... What's he weighing in at the moment?
I don't know.
Roughly, you've seen any photos?
I don't know. It's difficult to say. He's just good at playing games. He posted a photo recently of him looking in quite good shape, but it was an old photo of way back when, and everyone was like, So like, I don't know, and I don't care. Maybe I'm going to guess 105.
And you're coming in 80. And what height is he? You're 6'2", 6'3".
I'm 6'3".
What's he?
I'm 6 foot.
6 foot. Okay. He might come in at 2-3 stone heavier than you.
Yeah.
How quick are your hands?
Quicker than his.
I like it.
So tell me the footwork.
Tell me the date of this fight.
July the 1st.
And whereabouts?
It is Brentwood, is it Essex? Brentwood, Essex. We've pretty much now sold out the main sports venue there.
Brilliant.
There's a handful of tickets left, I think. Which is not bad.
You've got Matchroom Sports, Eddie Hearn involved?
No. No, we're just doing it ourselves.
Okay. We were up there last week, in fact, weren't we, up in Brentwood with the boys up there.
So I've put myself in some uncomfortable positions in training to try and mimic how I might feel.
Yeah.
If you don't mind, I won't talk about those because I don't want him to get any advantage knowing what I'm up to. But believe you me, I've gone to places and put myself in uncomfortable situations to prepare myself. I've spoken in front of thousands of people on a regular basis as a public speaker anyway. So yeah, I could. The thing is, if I get an adrenaline dump and it halves my speed and my fitness, well, if mine's 10 times better than him, I'm still... at an advantage.
Yep.
And if it does it to me, it'll do it to him.
Mm. While we're on boxing, tell me about you interviewing Chris Eubank Sr.
Yeah, so that was the most bizarre, awkward... I remember at university, whenever my mates used to throw up, everyone would make an announcement and go and watch the person throw up, stand in a circle and watch them. And everyone's like, oh, don't look. And then you have to look.
Yeah.
And me interviewing Chris Eubank was like that. It was so awkward and so tense, but it made it compelling viewing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
where was it? Who set it up? Shah?
Shah set it up.
Where was
it? No, she didn't set it up. We did it ourselves. But Shah, she knows him. Yeah. She's friends with him. And on the day, it ended up happening 5 hours after it was booked in. Chris was just all over the place. And we were going through his agent and then him. And then in the end, I was with Shah that day. And Shah's just like, look, let me just call him. And she hustled. And in the end, we found somewhere. Where is it? We did it. Soho House, was it? A random ass place, as Harry.
I remember seeing it and I was like, oh my God. I remember seeing the interview going, oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it was like.
Because he put you under pressure at times.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, again, but he put you under pressure and then you were like, this is odd. Everything was odd about it.
Yeah.
Was he in a good mental state, do you think?
It's difficult to know. I'm not a mental health expert. It wasn't really my place to say because, number one, I think he openly smokes weed.
Yep.
And I could definitely smell it. Can't say I saw him have a joint, but I can say I smelled it. Mm. So there's that. How he's been punched in the head a million times. Mm. So just those two things could make someone slow, eccentric.
And he just lost his boy.
There you go. And that.
Mm.
So I'm not close to him to know what his mental health is really like, but
you must have sensed though, like we're all watching that, we all sensed, and there was a lot of controversy around that. You must have sensed something when you're in there.
Well, that's a bit like you saying to me when I finished my fight, Rob, just recount the last 3 2-minute rounds, exactly what happened. I won't remember. It's bang.
Mm.
It's what everyone says about having done it. I was in there, we're doing it, I'm like, there was shock or surprise. What the fuck? Am I really here? Pinch myself. Over, gone.
Yeah.
So no, you don't get that.
Because there was no setup, was there? It was on a couch. Let's go filming with the cameras are on. Let's go.
Yeah.
And it was, but
no, there was no real. I wasn't in the middle of it thinking, fuck, I don't think he's very well, and there's going to be a major backlash from this. Never once did I have that, because you're just in it.
Yeah.
You don't really know, and you don't know how it's going to be received. Yeah. And of course, you're an interviewer. So you want to be in the conversation, but you've also got to be in your head about the next question.
Yeah.
And so you're not, sometimes you're thinking about the next question as opposed to listening to the answer. So it's all just like a great big freaking whirlwind. Woo! But it's his manager and his family's responsibility. So I don't usually pay for guests, but I paid for Chris Eubank.
Well, how much did you pay him?
I'll keep that confidential. I think it's the right thing to do. But it went through his manager. So it's his manager's responsibility.
Roughly, how much did you pay him? Because he's got everyone's got a number on them. Everyone's got a figure on them.
Nah, I'm not going to say. I don't think it's right. Yeah.
I didn't think you were a bottler.
That is a judgmental thing to say. just because I respect someone's confidentiality doesn't make me a bother.
Your confidentiality.
It could be mine. It could be Chris Eubank's. I mean, you're just we're going down the road of Chris's mental health, and now you're talking.
I want to know how much
fee.
I want to know how much you paid him.
I'll tell you off air as a friend.
Okay, north.
I'll tell you off air as a friend.
North of 10 grand.
Are you happy with me? I normally just blur everything out.
This
is the second thing on a podcast I've declined to say. I actually feel really good about that, because the two reasons I'm not telling you are for protection of others. So I'm pleased with myself. I'm not telling you, but I will tell you off air if you just keep it discreet.
Did you enjoy the interview?
I fucking loved it.
Yeah.
What I loved about it was, it's a bit like your hardest spar or your toughest experience in business. I just felt like I grew as an interviewer that overnight.
Mm.
Because we all want to get on with our guests. But actually, the ones you grow through, like, you could put Donald Trump there and I know I could match him up.
Yeah.
Put Piers Morgan there, I know I could match him up. But before Chris Eubank, maybe not.
Mm.
But I can.
So you learned a lot.
Yeah. because you've got to be in there and you've got to feel it. Like, when you're there and you're like, fuck, this is awkward, and you sit there and you smile, because he didn't, it wasn't just awkward, it was weird.
It was weird like, at times, like, wasn't
it? You didn't know this, yeah. I'll tell you this.
Yeah.
When we sat down, I started talking to him and he blanked me. And you know, you normally have a bit of chat before, he just blanked me and would not talk to me. And here's the thing, we couldn't work out, like, because at times it was clear, because he said some things, that he's doing it for the show and the persona of Chris Eubank and to put really good content out there. And then at times it was like, is he doing this because he's not sharp in his mind? Or and it was always, it was really difficult to work out which, it was like in and out of different characters. But imagine sitting here, you know, you had to do a bit of messing around to get this thing started. And you start conversing with me and I just sit there like that and I don't even acknowledge you. And I just growl. I mean...
Mate, what was the growling he was doing? I remember seeing it.
Yeah.
Were you thinking, what was going through your mind when he was growling at you?
Honestly, within minutes, I just thought, this is going to be the best podcast interview I've ever done.
Yeah.
Because it was just so different.
Yeah.
And if you are, would I rather have a really nice but tame conversation or a fucking awkward, sticky, like, get me the fuck out of here, but I'm staying, I'll take that one.
Yeah, all day long.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
Because one, that's what everyone talks about, and you grow. Yeah, I grew as a guest, as an interviewer.
Tell me about your world. Like, you've jumped on the podcasting in the UK really early. When was your first episode of your podcast, Disruptive Entrepreneur?
7.5 years ago.
Is it seven? Is that right?
Yeah, it's called Disruptors now.
Oh, you've changed it, haven't you?
Yeah.
Of course you have.
Yeah.
Why did you... So 7.5 years ago you started.
Yeah.
You've done how many episodes?
Nearly 1,000, is it, Harry?
Between both podcasts, over 1,000.
Okay, so I have a podcast called Money. So yeah, between them, just probably 1,300.
Just the Disruptive one.
Just under 1,000 episodes. Yeah, so not many people have done
more
than that.
What did you see before everyone else about the podcasting world? Because I only found podcasting really 2.5 years ago in lockdown. That's when we set up our one. I was like, oh, podcasting, let's give it a go. I didn't know anything about podcasts. 90% of the UK didn't know anything about podcasts when we started. Now, over the last couple of years, everyone jumping on it. What did you see 7 years ago?
An opportunity to reach more people. An opportunity to have really interesting conversations, which I love to do. And I was a fan of podcasts.
But where did you see that? Did you see it from America?
Yeah, I mean, all the podcasts I listened to before I started my own, i.e. 9 years ago, they were all American. There wasn't, I couldn't remember, I would have probably been one of the first Brits, I would have thought.
Yeah, I would have thought so.
Back then. Yeah, they were nearly all American. Joe Rogan, Tim Ferriss, you know, those kind of people.
Yeah. And what have you seen, how have you seen the podcasting world grow over the 7 years? And when have you seen the biggest trajectory?
We've never had a moment of exponential growth. It's been steady growth. Unless we get a wild guest and then we get a spike, like Andrew Tate and Jordan Peterson and David Icke. And normally for us, it's the more controversial ones that get the biggest. And so we have these moments where, you know, you get 10 million downloads and views in 48 hours. And you get 35,000 new followers in a week. And those happen X number of times per year. And all the other times, it's just slow and steady. Weirdly, it was probably easier to get guests 5 years ago than it is now. And I wish I'd have known. Because I thought as we get bigger and better, it will be easier to get guests. And what we found is... because there's a lot more podcasts and media is changing, people are being very selective. So people we would have bagged are like, oh, when we do our next round of promotion, or when we launch our next book, or when we're next in the UK, we get a load of that now, whereas we'd have just got it before. So the space has definitely changed in that regard. Yeah.
How did you... get Andrew Tate?
My one of my PAs messaged him Well, actually, one of my PAs got in touch with his agent, and they were ding-dong back and forth for ages. And then we got a message going, we're in Dubai, come out next week. So we just flew out to Dubai.
You flew out to Dubai, did you?
Yeah.
Why would you want to do that?
Because Andrew Tate at the time was God tier.
Yeah.
Maybe Donald Trump would have been a bigger guest. You could count 10 people in terms of the potential for growth alive that might have been bigger than Andrew Tate at that time. I don't even know if I could think of... Like, if I said to Harry, would you rather have Andrew Tate or... And I listed off all these A-listers, he'd be saying Andrew Tate, Andrew Tate, Andrew Tate, Andrew Tate, yeah. Andrew Tate. At the time.
Yeah.
Different now because we've done that.
Yeah.
And we've had the ups and the downs of that. But at the time, it was like we'd have flown to Timbuktu to get it done.
What have been the ups and what have been the downs of having Andrew Tate on your podcast?
So the ups are wild virality. In the first week, it was just blowing up everywhere. And then the downs are then the ongoing fallout of that. Like, and I'm not talking about opinion, because as far as I'm concerned, as a podcast host, these are the opinions of my guests. And if people are going to lambast me for the opinion of my guest, they need to check themselves and have a real think about their judgments. So I don't care about opinion. I care about feedback, and I'll listen to feedback. But, you know, nonsense opinion doesn't do anything for me. But we got our YouTube account shadow banned. We had endless videos taken down from YouTube and TikTok. And both, like, our TikTok at one point was just going wild. It's just like flatline now. Our YouTube's a bit of a graft and a grind. Yeah. It seems like on every channel we raced 250,000 followers and then just something fucking happens.
Yeah.
And our Andrew Tate era, because we went Andrew Tate, Katie Hopkins, Chris Eubank, bang, bang, bang. And honestly,
that's three big hitters.
Yeah, that two weeks, we were. Harry's little saying is, "Let's get bigger than Jesus," and we were bigger than Jesus in those few weeks. And then, bang, everything started getting taken away because they are controversial. So we're now in the middle of rethinking: do we chase those kind of people, or do we play a bit of a longer game?
Yeah.
But whoever it is, I try and drive an interesting conversation. And normally an interesting conversation is more interesting with an interesting person.
Absolutely.
And not a vanilla person.
Yeah. I like real people. People say to me, get more celebrities. I want real people with real stories. Yeah. Celebrities are great. Don't get me wrong.
The difficulty with that, though, is you don't know what a real conversation is until you've had it.
Agree.
Yeah.
What did you like about Andrew Tate?
What I did like about Andrew Tate, I still like about Andrew Tate. I like his "you are responsible" attitude. I like his the way he hacked social media to his advantage. It is like, if you want a case study,
that's genius, isn't it?
Yeah,
I agree.
And you can hate him, and you can disagree with him, but you can't deny that. Also, I judge people on my experiences with them. And when we went out to meet Andrew, he was 25 minutes early, bearing in mind Chris Eubank was 5 hours late. And we got 3.5 hours out of him with no line.
Brilliant.
And really nice to my team that were out there, and we stayed in touch. And, you know, he helped a bit with pushing the podcast out there, and he was good to deal with. And there's plenty of people in the celebrity interview world that are a pain in the ass to deal with, and we've had so many guests that have bailed like 5, 6, and 7 times. One of them is on your board there, I won't mention their name. And you're like, for fuck's sake, if you say yes, do it. If you don't want to do it, say
just
no.
Just let me know.
All good. Mm. But the amount of, you know, fuckery that goes on. But look, I'm also not bitter because this is people.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, if they saw me as important enough, they wouldn't. And if they do see him as important, they would. I'm fine with it. But like, I interviewed Jake Paul. And obviously he's massive. And the first time he just didn't turn up. And
where did you interview him?
It was on Zoom.
Zoom, okay.
Which, I hate Zoom.
I hate Zoom. But you'd take it.
Well, I hate that. Zoom, but if Donald Trump's on Zoom or nothing, I'll do Zoom.
Yeah.
It's one of those.
Yeah.
So it just didn't turn up for the first one.
Well, so who organised it? You organised
his assistant.
His assistant said, right, we're on, 100%, yeah. And he just didn't turn up. No, so you're sitting there with the computer open.
Yeah, and his assistant didn't even know where he was. That was experience number one. And then the second time, he turned up really late. And then the first, it was like this. And the first thing he said was, so how long is this?
Oh, mate.
And I went, we've got scheduled for an hour. And he went, for what? An hour? Nah. Like, and that was the first, and I'm like, okay, maybe we'll get it done in 40. If I was interviewing him now and he said that, yeah, I'd be like, you've agreed an hour.
Yeah, or off skis.
So and...
Did you have to pay Jake Paul?
I'll tell you afterwards.
Did you have to pay Jake Paul, yes or no?
Why are you bothered about that?
Because I want to know.
Well, if you want to know, why don't you ask me off air and respect the fact that I don't want to say it on it?
I'm not asking how much. I'm asking you, did you pay him?
Yeah, but you still haven't answered my question. And I'm allowed to be the interviewer as well. Why are you so bothered about asking me if I paid for Jake Paul on your podcast?
Because I'm interested to see how much it means to you to have him on your podcast.
Harry, should I answer this or not? What do you think?
Whatever you say, Canning will be used against you.
No, I didn't pay him.
So for this whole conversation here, it obviously sounds like you did pay him. I won't ask you how
much. No, I just said no, I didn't pay him.
Yeah, but I won't ask you how
so
much.
So do you think I'm lying then?
No.
No.
I believe you.
No, I didn't.
I believe you.
I didn't pay
I believe
him.
You. You didn't pay him. I respect that.
Yeah. But have I paid people? Yes.
Why? Who have you paid?
Right. I'm going to take control of this.
All right. Mate, this is my podcast. Do you enjoy paying people? Let's just soften this. Do you enjoy paying people? Obviously, you'd rather have them for free, but do you think it's worth paying people just for the knock-on effect of Instagram, YouTube, your podcast on Spotify and Apple? So as their profile is a big profile, your profile is raising with it. Is that how you see it?
Have you ever paid a guest?
No.
Never?
Never.
So I think you've got some personal motives for asking this, which is absolutely fine.
And remember, I freestyle all my podcasts. Nothing's pre-planned. It's just you and I having a convo.
Yeah. So I'm going to give you some context because I think it's important.
Yeah.
If I tell you everyone I've paid, it might make it hard for me to get future guests.
Yeah.
Without,
because people think,
because they'll just assume, Rob will put 10, 20, 30 grand. So I reserve the right to answer the question how I want.
Yeah.
I know someone, and I won't mention their name because I'm not that kind of guy. I know someone who keeps saying he doesn't pay podcast guests, and I know for a fact he does.
Yeah.
And part of me thinks, you're lying little toad. Mm. And part of me thinks, I respect your right to not disclose that because you are well known and everyone will want a nice 20 off you.
Yeah.
And then you just painted yourself into a corner for no reason. Mm. So context, 95% of my guests, would that be about right, Harry? We have not paid. We've got them for free.
Mm.
Five, let's even say 10%. It's no more. We have paid. Why would I pay?
Yeah.
To speed it up.
Yeah, okay.
Or to get someone I otherwise wouldn't get.
Mm.
So sometimes I've got a guest and I know we'll get him in a year because we're talking and it's agreed, but it's a year and I want it next week. So I offer to pay.
Yeah.
And that might be because we've got a low bank. You know, we haven't got a lot of content back. So that's reason number one. Like, would I pay Donald Trump to get him on my show if I couldn't get him on my show unless I paid him? Fuck yes, I would. And I bet you fucking would too. Would you?
No, I wouldn't.
I bet you would. Mate, so there's an affordable amount of money to get Donald Trump and there's a signed NDA you would...
I promise you, I would not pay Donald Trump to be on the show.
Okay, all right, then you might not love him. Who would be your GOAT guest to get on this show, who'd be the best person ever to get on this show, other than Rob Moore? you would know this. Yeah. Who's his GOAT?
I would go a couple.
Okay.
I'd go a few, in fact.
Yeah.
Now you've answered, because I've never really thought about it.
Yeah.
But now you've mentioned it, I'd go Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
I'd go Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
And I'd go Paolo Di Canio.
Okay. Cool.
Remember him?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Colourful guy. So, someone messages you. You can get Joe Rogan on next week for X amount of money. He's in the UK. He's only coming once. It's X amount of money. You can afford it. Do you do it or not?
How much?
An amount you can afford.
No. How much? Because everyone's got a price. I do a lot of gambling with my mate. I'm not a gambler, but I'm always daring my mates to do stuff. Yeah. My saying for the last 30 years, everyone's got a price.
20. Right? You can 20 bags, you get Conor McGregor. Fuck it. I mean, that's a bargain. I actually reached out to Conor to get him on the show. He wanted $500,000.
Did he?
Yeah.
My God.
Conor would be great.
Yeah.
Conor is God tier.
Yeah.
So let's say 20, because 20, you can get either Conor or Joe, yes or no?
No.
Bullshit.
No. Get me from 20, I'll turn him down.
I don't believe you.
Mate, I promise you.
I don't believe you.
I promise you.
Would you try and talk him into... I don't believe...
I promise you, I would not pay 20 bags for Joe Rogan or Conor McGregor.
Well, then you're not taking podcasting seriously.
Why?
Enough. Because that's just instant blow up.
Yeah, great.
That's instant virality.
But for what?
Well, you meet the person, you get to know them.
I'm not paying 20 G's to meet someone for an hour.
Well, you're not rich enough then.
It's nothing to do with money. It's nothing to do with money.
Nah. 10.
It's nothing to do.
10.
No. No.
Well,
I promise you, I would not pay that money for someone to come in here and talk to me for an hour.
Well, you might get 2.5. I mean, Joe Rogan doesn't do hour conversations, does he? He does three.
Even that, it just doesn't rock my boat for that. That's just me.
What? And then you get to swap phone numbers afterwards and stay in touch.
Whoopie doo. I know a lot of famous people. I don't get excited by that. I don't think, I've got Joe Rogan's mobile on. This is amazing. I'm all excited. It doesn't.
So, all right. So why do you do the podcast then?
Because I love it. I love chatting to cool people. I love chatting to some mad stories.
Yeah. So you're.
And I do the podcast because I found something. That I own a festival, as you know, and that's once a year. All chips into that. I found something that I absolutely adore doing.
And so your top two guests, you've got a chance to get them.
And I'm
going to assume that 10 or 20 is not a huge amount of money for you. And you can put it through the business. And you've just turned that down. I think you're an idiot.
Yeah. I don't think so. But we're different.
Let me finish. I think you're an idiot for turning it down. I don't think you're an idiot person. I think you're a good person. I think that would be a really dumb move to turn down Conor or Joe Rogan for 20 grand, personally.
Yeah.
Because the upside is just so potentially big.
How many people you got working on your personal brand? So let's just explain your personal brand. It's your podcast, your Rob Moore websites. What else is there that people are working on?
All my social media.
How many full-timers have you got on you? Roughly.
Yeah, probably 5 or 6.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Stephen Bartlett's got 30 working on his Diary of a CEO.
Yeah, well, that's why he's having the success that he's having with that podcast.
Yeah.
Because he is putting time, resource, energy, and money into it. And it's his pretty much sole focus. Mm. I'm running a 20+ million a year training business. 360 property portfolio. I'm training
staff.
Yeah, I'm training for a fight. So for me, my podcast is my little part-time hobby. Which I enjoy. Mm. That doesn't surprise me one bit.
Yeah.
And a lot of people would be like, wow, I can't believe that. Mm. But that's obvious to me. Mm. Yeah, because, he's now built one of the top British personal brands in the country because of that.
Mm.
And
he's done phenomenally well. Phenomenally well, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Hats off to him.
Yeah, I always...
Do you like him? Do you like his persona?
Well, they're two different questions, aren't they?
Yeah, there's two questions for you.
Yeah. I interviewed Stephen and he was like, yeah, this has been great. We got on really well. He's like, you've got to come on my show. and then just went off into the oblivion. And I think if you say something, you should mean it. And if you say something, you should do it. But can I judge him for that when, you know, I'm not as A-lister as some of his guests. And have I said something to someone in the past and they're not delivered? Absolutely. What I was saying about human traits. So I can't really get on my high horse and judge him for that because I'm not a perfect human. But I told you my experience with Andrew Tate and what it was. And my experience with Steve wasn't... He and we were fine and we chatted and it was everything was bigged up and we were going to do... I was going to go on his show and blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, Stonewall, ghosting and whatever else. And just dealing with his team wasn't the best. But, you know, maybe he had bigger fish to fry. I don't know. And that's my only... personal experience with him in terms of, so that's all I can say. Don't know him well enough to judge, and I would only judge when I knew someone well enough. In terms of his persona, there's one thing I know is bullshit and I'm not going to say what it is. Everything else, I think, you know, he's built a great brand. You know, he has figured out a way to get people emotional on his show, and I know he knows that that makes it viral. He's got the right guest at the right time, because we've got in the past the right guest at the wrong time.
That can have an effect.
The right, I mean, he, for example, Molly May, perfect time. And you know, like, the guy's a good marketer. And I'm not a... so there's those two little blots, little flies in the ointment. But for me, they're small. I'm certainly not going to criticize him publicly because I like to celebrate successes. And he's been very intentional. He's got a clear strategy. He's come into a space and he's worked out, right, I'm going all in, spending masses of money on equipment. You know, you could argue you don't need that. Those kind of cameras, you don't need that kind of studio.
He's got the money to do it, why not? Good luck to him.
And like, if he plays it smart, he's going to be able to feast off that for the rest of his life. There was that issue, wasn't there, in the media with him and the value of his company and what he'd made out and all that. But as far as I see, anyone who's successful, the media's going to come for you at one point. And I don't know the truth behind that.
What was it, he sold out for 200 mil but he took 40 mil?
I have no idea.
I
mean, and apparently,
guess, isn't it?
Yeah, unless you, I was going to say, unless you ask him, you don't know. But people don't always tell the truth. So maybe you would never know. But when I saw that, I thought, I don't know the truth. There could be some exaggeration in there. He wouldn't be the first or the last marketer to exaggerate. But all that's happening is the media are taking their turn on him. Like they will everyone.
What would you change about the way the government are taxing us businesses and entrepreneurs right now?
Flat rate.
Because at the moment, we're getting taxed on turnover. Surely it's just be just purely should be taxed on your profit. With VAT, business rates, national insurance, everything else, as a business owner, we've got to pay constantly. And they're saying 70% of businesses do not earn money out there. 70% of businesses don't earn profit at the moment. I'm guessing after this year, it's going to be a lot more, I'd imagine.
Yeah, so what you've said, I would love, but it's not realistic.
Okay.
I would
give me the perfect Rob scenario if you ran this country for entrepreneurial business startups.
Okay. So as much as I would love for us only to be taxed on profit, you just said most companies don't make any profit. Therefore, the country wouldn't generate any anything. Revenue off entrepreneurs. But then you could argue, but if they weren't taxed so much, they could make more profits. It's a bit of a vicious cycle, but they're never going to make enough money out of profit unless they helped us make profit. So that's unrealistic. I think number one should be a flat rate, i.e. 20%, 25%. At the moment, it's VAT, corp tax, income tax, national insurance.
And it gets confusing.
If you're pension new to contributions. Business rates. There's a load of things that aren't called tax that are a tax. National insurance is a tax. business rates is a tax. Yeah. So they you can't polish a turd. Mm. And they're trying to call the turd something else. It's not. It's still a fucking tax. And there's more and more of these. And they think we're fucking stupid enough to, oh, well, that's not a tax. That's a national insurance contribution. Yeah. That goes to X. It's still a fucking tax. Yeah.
So if you added up what they're doing now and put it on a flat rate, what percent would that be?
Well, I mean, I'd love it to be low, wouldn't I? But I'm biased.
No, not for you. I'd bias as well. I'd love it to be low. But what is it that sits at the moment? Employees, national insurance. It goes on. 20% plus
57%.
Yeah.
About that.
Yeah.
And that's not what you buy. That's just what you generate in revenue. Yeah. And then everything you buy, there's tax on top of that.
Yeah. There's fat on everything you buy. But you can't claw that
back.
You can't
claim that back. Yeah. Yeah. On various goods and services and food and things like that. So I reckon you're paying about 70%. Tax in everything you earn and everything you buy. Mm. How is that fair? Mm. How is that's that
wrong,
fair?
Isn't it?
Yeah, so let's be kind and say it's 50-50.
Yeah.
Even if it is, you're working 25 hours a week for yourself and 25 hours a week for the government. Mm. And there's fucking potholes and the NHS is fucked. And they're putting us in lockdown and it's just all wrong. So number one, it would be a flat rate because
give me a number. What percent of that flat rate? Well, it depends. Roughly.
It depends. If we can get a little bit out of the super rich, it might be able to be 20-25%. So at the moment, people don't understand the difference between rich and super rich. Mm. So super rich is Google, Amazon, Facebook.
Billionaires.
Yeah. And they pay 4% corp tax. Mm. You pay now 25% corp tax is what it's going up to, and it was 19.
Yeah.
You're rich, they're super rich.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, tax the rich. No. Tax the super rich. Because would it be fair if, okay, look, the super rich, they've got good accountants. They should be rewarded for creativity. Yes, they bring in thousands of jobs, but we do as well, all of us smaller ones. But if they just paid 8% corp tax, not 4, that would generate trillions probably. What's an extra 4%? Of the turnover of all the biggest companies in this country is trillions. Yeah. So what I'd like to see happen is just a little percentage of that trickle down, which would be trillions, which means we can soften the blow on the small entrepreneurs, because the small entrepreneurs actually generate a lot of the economy. I think it's 90% of the economy. So, but realistically, these super rich are funding election campaigns and probably making big donations and therefore driving policy, and they have a lot of power.
Yeah.
And it would be very easy for me to say, oh, well, I would never do that. But if I had a 100 billion company and I could influence policy to the advantage of my company and I could get my corp tax down, I'd get my corp tax down to 4% if I could.
Yeah.
So it's human nature. Mm. But a bit off the super rich, flat rate, and I'd incentivize and reward entrepreneurs. So let's say you're starting a business. I'm going to give you 6 to 12 months no business rates.
Yeah.
And you're going to get to a certain level, then I'm going to give you business rates. Yeah. And I'm going to have a few loans and grants that you can go and get, which might be funded like you. So I, for example, if the government came to me and said, look, we want to fund a load of startups. You've got the Rob Moore Foundation. Would you donate £10,000 from the Rob Moore Foundation or £100,000 to the government fund? And we're going to put that into entrepreneurs and we're going to get rid of their business rates, and we're going to reduce their taxes till they get to some point. I'd do that.
Yeah.
So entrepreneurs helping entrepreneurs, but the government have got to start that process and want to help entrepreneurs, and they don't. Mm. They know that we're an easy political win for them because most of the population don't like entrepreneurs and rich people. So we're not a vote. We're not a vote that counts. We're too small a vote. So if they go against us, that's good for their voting. And they don't understand how to grow an economy. Mm. If you've got one tree that bears fruit and you cut the tree down for the wood, you can do that once. Mm. And that's what the government are doing with the economy. They're ruining it by increasing taxes here, there and everywhere and increasing debt. Instead of thinking, okay, how can we drive innovation? How can we drive growth? How can we encourage people to come back to work instead of work from home? Mm. But they would never understand because they're not entrepreneurs. They don't run a real economy. A real economy has to have a profit and loss, and it has to have a positive balance sheet, and it has to be solvent. Your company will be solvent. It will make a profit. It will have a balance sheet which has more asset than liability. The government has more liability than asset. It is trading insolvently, and they've made it legal for them to do that, illegal for us to do that. It's all fucking wrong. It's all fucked.
Rob, where do you see your future, mate?
So I want to be in business till I'm 100 and whatever. And I don't want to stop. I've semi-retired loads of times and I just get really bored and itchy within days. I'll continue to buy property with my business partner and we'll build that empire. I'd like the training business to maybe start going into other English-speaking countries. Like if Progressive Property and Progressive Success, my training companies, were in America, it would be 75 million, 100 million company. But we're in the UK and it's smaller. So maybe we might look to go into these other countries. I'll keep writing books. I'm writing one and I've got my next two planned.
How easy is it to write a book?
It's hard.
Yeah,
it's hard to write a book. It's harder to write a good book.
Yeah.
But...
And you've written how many books?
18.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's your favourite book of those 18?
Probably Money, because it's my favourite subject. And because it's one, I like...
Is that your favourite subject? If you were at a wedding somewhere and someone was on the table and there's a load of couples there and someone started talking about money, would you be all over that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, challenging their bullshit beliefs that they've bought into from mainstream media and their family and friends and the system and the banks and the government. You know, the rhetoric.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a lot of people avoid being on, talking about money and being honest about money.
Yeah.
You know, because you said you like holidays. Well, good holidays are expensive, especially if you've got kids and especially now with the cost of living and inflation. So, a really good holiday, being, because to have a really good holiday, not only do you want to go somewhere nice, and I won't project. But if everyone listening, imagine your perfect holiday. It's probably not the cheapest, shittiest, all-inclusive one. It's probably a nice one in a nice place and blah, blah, blah.
Barbados for a month.
There you go.
Yeah.
Here's the biggest cost, taking a month out of your business to be able to afford to do it. People don't think about that. The cost of a holiday might be 20 grand, but for you to take a month off work is your month's salary. Or
that's if you are 50, working for someone.
It is. Or if you're an most entrepreneurs work for themselves, you know, they have one staff member, two staff member. You know, I could go on holiday for a year, but most people haven't built their business up to do that. So that all takes money. Because I think the thing with money is people project judgment into it, i.e. they get emotional about it. But if you think about a hammer, you can take a hammer and it's a good lever to knock a nail in a piece of wood. And you wouldn't think anything of it. It's a good lever to pull a nail out of a piece of wood, better than your fingernails. You can also use a hammer to smash someone's skull in. But let's say someone took a hammer and murdered someone. The hammer isn't on trial. It's just a tool. What's on trial is the human who used that tool for murder. That's what money is. So money is a fuel. It's a tool. It's an enabler, an exaggerator, an accelerator, but it's just a tool. And people judge. There'll be people listening to this podcast that will judge me because I've paid guests. I slightly judged your business acumen for not paying guests. So there's all judgment around money. It's the most emotive subject. Yet in this country, it's the thing most people have got the handle on the least.
Well, everything revolves around money.
Yeah, of course it does.
Every minute of every day, someone's working somewhere, someone's doing it. Everything revolves around money. Yeah. Why do you think there is jealousy around money?
Because everyone wants it and no one will fucking admit it.
Yeah.
Everyone wants a nicer car, but no one will fucking admit it. And you don't have to want seven cars, but you probably want a nice one. So it's like, you bastard, you've got what I want, but I'm not brave enough and vulnerable enough to admit that I haven't done what it takes to get what you've got. And I'm not in the student enough humility mindset to go and learn from you. Instead, I'll just criticize you. Because when I criticize you for being a greedy capitalist bastard, it makes me okay for fucking my life up and you won't judge me. And as you can tell, I've had some experience in this.
Do you think you've become a better person earning more money?
Money has enabled my good traits.
Yeah.
So it's hard to be generous with money when you're broke.
Yep.
Every time I get a taxi, every time, I always round it up to the nearest 20. Mm. So if it's £4, it's 20. If it's £16, it's 20. If it's £21, it's 40. By the way, I've never told anyone that. I do it all the time. Mm. And giving a taxi driver a tip the same as the fee always makes their day. They love it. They'll do other things for you, which I won't mention on this podcast.
What, in the back of a black car?
No, it's not. It's not that. It's to do with money. You dirty bastard. Yeah. So what money has enabled me to do is it's exaggerated my good traits.
Yeah, okay.
And I try and resist it exaggerating my dark traits. Okay. But it tries.
Yeah.
It fucking tries, yeah. You know, greed. Yeah. It's there.
So you're finding that the more money you've got, the more generous you've become.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, how can you be generous when you're broke? The only thing you can give is time. Now, I know time is valuable. But if you're broke, you haven't got the time to give. Mm. So actually, one of the great... I gave someone a 40-minute consultation session. A year's worth of mentoring with me cost $50,000. So one of my team...
How much?
$50,000.
50 bags.
50 grand.
Do people pay
I'm
that?
I'm worth every penny.
Do people pay that?
Why wouldn't they pay that?
I'm not saying they wouldn't, but yeah. 50 bags.
Yeah.
What do they get with you?
They get a year's worth of mentoring.
And what's that? Once a day? Once a week? Once a month?
Once an hour? Pitch the tent outside my house?
What'd they get for 50 grand?
So group masterminding at 25 grand, one-to-one at 50 grand. They get access to me and all my knowledge, experience of 17 years building a 150+ million in revenue, probably biggest private rental empire in Peterborough, author of 18 business-related books.
You've done. Okay.
But remember I said that money buys speed.
Yeah.
So why would people invest that money? By the way, I have maximum 50 clients. I'm not interested in
Do you think that 50 Gs speeds them up rather than learning themselves to go, you come to me, pay the 50 Gs, and you're going to be sped up by 5 years?
Well, the reason I can charge 50 Gs and people pay me 50 Gs is because it speeds me up. And if I could speed them up more, they'd pay me 100. And if I could speed them up less, they'd pay me 20. Mm. Because I wrote the formula for wealth. Wealth equals fair exchange plus wealth equals value plus fair exchange times leverage. The new version will be wealth equals perceived value plus fair exchange times leverage. So I know the formula for wealth. And I know I give fair exchange for that.
Yeah.
That 50 grand.
And how many one-to-ones they get with you in that year? Is it personal one-to-one or is it Zoom?
It can be whatever they want. Like if they want to come down to my office and want to spend some time with me, they can. I think we have a minimum that they can get, which is 8 Zooms, 8 one-to-ones, and they get my mobile number and they get access to me on WhatsApp 24/7, 365, which most people won't do, but I quite like doing it. But then yesterday, one of my staff members came up to me and said, oh, this guy's a big fan of yours. It was in the afternoon. He's a bit lost on where he wants to go. Do you like a chat? So I said, give me his number. Took my daughter to netball, was watching her. I just phoned him up and I gave him 40 minutes of my time for free and he was blown away. And that's what money can buy you, the time to do things like that. Because otherwise, if I didn't have any money, I'd have to be at work and I wouldn't be able to do that. And then I'd be at home with my family and I wouldn't be able to do that. Mm. And I can take my daughter to netball because I don't have to be at work. I go in the office once. On average, I go in the office less than a day a week.
Yeah. Happy days.
Yeah.
As that should be.
Mm. Yeah, people's businesses own them.
Yeah.
And, you want to try and own your business. But it's not easy. But then... nothing worth it is, you said, is writing books easy? Mm. It's the wrong question. You should say, is writing books hard? Yeah, then I'll go and do it. Because surely you want to do the hard things. Do you want to pick the easy exercises or the hard exercises? Do you want to pick the easy sparring partners or the hard sparring partners?
Depends if I was good at it. If I wasn't good at writing, I would want to make my life easier. If someone said to me, Dodge, people have said, Dodge, we want to write a book on you. We want to do this. Can you get it going? I wouldn't know where to start. I've got so many great stories about business and life and everything else. It would make a good book. But I don't know where to start. Do you just go in front of a computer and say, right, this is the intro, this is the middle bit? How does that work?
Yeah, there's different ways to write a book. You can write it in your normal life, i.e. try and dedicate an hour a day to it and write it. You can bugger off abroad on a really expensive holiday and write it while you're away. And the more expensive the holiday is, the more motivated you are to write the book. Otherwise, it's a waste of an expensive holiday. I've done both of those, by the way.
I prefer the latter.
Yeah, because it's accountability and you like holidays.
Yeah.
And then you can voice memo. So you could just take some time and just talk. Like, if someone's struggling to write a book, here's what I recommend.
Can't someone write it for you?
Yeah, they can. I'll come to that in a minute. Yeah. I recommend you go for a walk and just start expressing your thoughts on voice memos. Set up your own little voice memo WhatsApp group between yourself and just go on a walk and just start letting it out.
Yeah.
Because people never start. I wrote a book called Start Now, Get Perfect Later, because most people never start. They stop themselves before they start. So often just talking it out. Like, if you hired a ghostwriter, they're going to sit you down and they're going to get you to talk for hours.
Yeah, but it's much easier. Well, I have to say, right, listen to episode 1 of Eventful Lives, 4, 7, 38, 50. It's all in there.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So if you've already laid down most of the content,
yeah,
that's what Stephen's doing, isn't he? He's done a Tim Ferriss model where he's launching a book, extracting all the wisdom from his
podcast.
From his podcast.
Okay.
Tim Ferriss was the first person I saw do that with Tools of Titans. That's a smart play. That's leverage. Build one really big asset.
Yeah.
So I built a property asset, and then I had property management, property training off that asset.
Yeah.
So you're thinking about it a slightly different way. You're looking to leverage an existing asset to write the book. In some ways, that's smart. But the only book I had someone else help me write was probably not my best book because it wasn't my own voice. Okay. But then I already had a voice. And if you haven't written a book yet, you don't have a voice.
Yeah.
So my friend Joel Ratner, lovely guy, he got his book ghost written, and it's a brilliant book.
Is he the guy? Is that Ratner Jewelers?
Yeah. You should. Have you not had him on?
No.
You could get him on.
Is he a good lad?
10 grand.
And some gold chains.
Gerald is one of my favourite humans.
Really?
I love Gerald.
Is he honest?
Oh.
Says it how it is.
Oh, like.
Brilliant.
Yeah. He's the, you know, the people that are so honest, they don't know how to sell or market themselves. And, you know, they're so honest about their vulnerability.
Yeah.
Because he's not got any other ulterior motive.
And he's known for...
Yeah. The biggest gaffe in history.
Slagging off his own company. Yes.
Well, no.
Not slagging... What was his words?
Yeah, exactly. He told a joke.
He had a load of Ratner's jewellers around the country.
Yeah.
And then
He was the biggest jewellery retailer in Europe.
Yeah.
Breaking America, which is rare. And he was at the Institute of Directors doing a speech. And he had a joke... essentially equating the value of one of his pieces of jewellery to a prawn sandwich, but i.e. cheap jewellery.
Yeah.
And then that got twisted and manipulated by the mainstream media. And I know other friends of mine who are very famous, so that's happened to them. So, no, what he is famous for saying, he didn't say.
Right.
That's why you need to talk to...
and find out.
...him to find out. But you should get him on your show.
Oh,
he's
love
brilliant.
To. Where's he based?
Lovely human, London.
He's London, is he?
Yeah. Yeah, he's great. And he's very honest.
Yeah. Rob, I've really, really enjoyed our chat.
Thank you.
I've really enjoyed it. I thank you for making the effort, and I thank you for your honesty.
Pleasure. That's what you want.
Yeah, been really good. Just before we finish up, how can people find you? Where can people find you?
So my name is Rob Moore. So anywhere online you'll find me. If you want to... The Disruptors podcast, if you're into podcasting, this is a podcast.
Yep.
Amazon, search me on Amazon. I've written loads of business books.
Social media platforms, Instagram?
It's all Rob Moore Progressive.
Okay.
You'll find them all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quality, mate.
Thank you very
much. Really enjoyed it.
Cheers.
You're a good man.
Thank you. So let me know what you think in the comments. Was he unnecessarily brutal? Do you believe him when he says he wouldn't pay for his ideal guests? There's also been a bit of heat about the Stephen Bartlett discussion, but I believe I have solid proof and what I say is 100% accurate. So again, let me know what you think in the comments.